This is Pacifica's Peace Watch, a show about peace, preserving it, promoting it, and monitoring those who would seek to destroy it. I'm Verna Avery Brown. This Saturday, tens of thousands of people from across the country are expected to assemble at the Vietnam Memorial Wall here in Washington, D.C. for a giant anti-war protest. Their presence is intended to send the grim message that a preemptive war with Iraq could lead to another Vietnam-like stalemate. The comparison to that tragic conflict has been frequently cited in recent months. Among the Vietnam-era critics who have spoken up in opposition to the Bush administration's current war plans is former Pentagon analyst Daniel Ellsberg. Ellsberg's 1972 release of the Pentagon Papers to the New York Times marked a major milestone in the movement against the Vietnam War. More recently, he authored an autobiography entitled Secrets, A Memoir of Vietnam and the Pentagon Papers. In the midst of a book tour, Daniel Ellsberg took some time out to speak with Pacifica radio host Larry Binsky about his predictions of what could occur in the Middle East if a war were launched.
Let me say right now, discussions, I am certain, of very soberly, of what we will do and what the Israelis are likely to do when and if, as George Tenet says, may happen, Saddam launches a significant amount of chemical weapons or biological weapons against either us or Israel. Both presidents have said publicly, Sharon and Bush, they have used the words in that respect that they will annihilate Iraq. Total devastation will be the answer. The answer to mass murder. But our answer to mass murder will be mass murder on a very much larger scale. There's no such thing as justified terrorism. This will be massive terrorism by the U.S. or Israel, and I feel certain that contingency plans are being prepared for that right now. They may not be triggered, they may not be decided on in the end, but there is discussion involving the word nuclear a lot more inside the White House, in the Pentagon, and in Israel than we see in our press.
You know, and that leads me to the question I want to ask you about what you found during your book tour, Daniel Ellsberg. But in reading your book right now in the present conjuncture of history, it's impossible for one not to speculate what another inadequate and, although certainly not as overtly nuts as Nixon was, but another, shall we say, a president who can be blown around by advisors, maybe hearing right now.
Nixon was not blown around by advisors. This one may be. I don't know. I don't have a real feel for what's in the mind of George W. Bush Jr. And I don't know Rumsfeld and Cheney, but I do feel confident that they don't, that they know that what they're saying about installing democracy in Iraq and as the goal of this, they know that's not true. They know that's a lie. And what they're saying directly contradicting the head of the CIA, that Saddam cannot be deterred. This man was deterred when he was being bombed for 6 weeks. Heavily, he's been the most tested. His deterrability is the most tested in the world at this point. But that it's safe to hit him anyway with chemical and warhead, or Tenet says no, that will cause him to use those weapons. They know better than that. Despite the Ellsberg principle that I learned in the Pentagon, anyone can be as dumb as he has to be to keep his job.
That's a really interesting.
Intelligence is no obstacle to that. Even brilliance, genius is no obstacle to that. But in this case, I don't believe they are that dumb about those. They're just lying.
While drawing parallels between Vietnam and what he fears will happen in Iraq, Ellsberg says he hasn't given up hope yet, and he hopes his book can be an organizing tool for those who oppose the coming war.
You were asking about what I'm talking about on this tour. Of course, I can't talk about anything but this war because we still have a chance to stop it. The bombs aren't falling yet, so I'm using my voice for that. But I could be talking about, I am talking about the book because this is current news, which is reliving the history of that time. I found just that reaction, those who have read any of it or hear what I have to say. But just the other day, I realized, wait a minute, I'm so anxious to get the immediate parallels. The later part of the book is what happens once you get into the war. And I don't have time for people to go out and buy the book. I want them to see this. A Viking did not rise to the idea of putting the whole book on the web. I did negotiate with him just 2 days ago when I had the idea. we put Chapter 1, Tonkin Gulf, and the Tonkin Gulf Resolution, the Tonkin Gulf incidents, the supposed Tonkin Gulf incidents that were actually provoked and ambiguous and didn't happen. That's on the web now on Ellsberg.net. And tell your friends, tell anybody in Congress, read that now. I've sent copies of this book to every senator and congressman I can think of, and people should make phone calls to this effect, thanking the ones who voted right and telling the other ones they are in danger of being fired if they don't get right. But this book will give them a good context to do it. I sent 3 copies to the office of one senator who voted wrong on this for his staff. But this is on, and the first 2 pages that we negotiated, how many pages I could get on. I couldn't get on all of Chapter 4. So I said, you've got to put on the first 2 pages. And the first sentence of Chapter 4, which is entitled Planning Provocation, is after the Tonkin Gulf Resolution, which is where we are now, planning for the next Tonkin Gulf incident to get us started. And the sentence starts, from early September 64, U.S., quote, retaliatory capability. It's in quotes because what we had, quote, retaliated to hadn't happened. Capability against North Vietnam, our capability was a cocked pistol. Officials were waiting for something to retaliate to and increasingly ready to provoke an excuse for attack if necessary. If history is repeating itself, and my guess is that it is, with a little difference, someone said history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. In this case, I think the Tonkin Gulf incident is going to come after the Tonkin Gulf Resolution 2, which we just passed, and I'm a guess, not for certain, but more likely than not, before this election. And that means that the president will decide to believe indications from intelligence that are very ambiguous and probably provoked deliberately by us, but in any case, indications that he has no choice but to move immediately, regardless of the UN, regardless of Congress, regardless of the feelings of Scowcroft and even his father and most of the countries. He's got to move to protect U.S. troops, and the bombing and the special forces then will go over right away, before the election, not in February and not in December, but in late December or, my guess, late October, early November.
Author Daniel Ellsberg speaking with Larry Binsky of Pacifica Station KPFA in Berkeley.
Come, you masters of war. Here they build the big guns. Here they build the death planes. Here they build all the bombs. Here they hide behind walls. Here they hide behind disks. I just don't want you to know I can see through your masks. You that never done nothing but build to destroy. You play with my world like it's your little toy. You put a gun in my hand and you hide from my eyes. And you turn and run farther when the fast bullets fly. Like Judas of old, you lie and deceive.
Bob Dylan, Masters of War. The International Socialist Organization organized a forum Wednesday to outline why hundreds of thousands are expected to walk in opposition to war against Iraq on Saturday. Reverend Graylin Hagler of Plymouth Congregational Church in Washington articulated the effect European imperialism will have, and he traced it to Rome as described in the Book of Revelations.
This culture is built upon pillars of violence. Ever since our inception, the idea that you can come if you have the weaponry and take anybody's land and take anybody's resources and exterminate the people if you need to exterminate the people, as long as it goes to the bottom line or as long as it goes to that protected group having dominance and having power, it's the same old story. So what happens internationally also gets mirrored locally. through the barrel of a gun, through a missile, or through an AK-47, or through an Apache helicopter, or through a fighter jet. If we think about it, we can do that internationally. Obviously, anybody thinks that they can solve any frustration, any dispute on a local basis through the barrel of a gun also. Sisters and brothers, we got to really deal with changing this entire culture. America has been sinful from its inception. Europe has been sinful ever since it stepped onto the international stage. I've been preaching lately in church from the book of Revelation. There was this figure, John, who was taken and he's placed into political exile. For what reason? The reason is that he refused to pledge allegiance to the empire. And so the whole book really has to do with his resistance to the empire. When folk were walking around on the plantation saying, steal away to Jesus, they weren't talking about just worshiping. They were saying that there was going to be a breakout tonight out of the plantation going north. Right. Rome felt that it could exercise power over the entire world because it had a large military, because it had the latest weaponry, because of all those things that it was stealing from all over the world, resources and grains and minerals and metals, and it was building up its treasury through the thievery that it was carrying on the world. It was a superpower. So when he talks about the four horses of the apocalypse, you heard of that, right? Coming from the north, south, east, and west. And what he was saying in that book, it was a caution to the empire. It was saying, no matter how big you are, no matter how much you spend on military budgets, no matter how big your army is and how great your latest weaponry is, the fact is you may be arrogant, but you will be brought low. You may be arrogant and you may think that you're powerful, but in fact, the least, the common denominator will topple you, will bring you down. And so his caution, in fact, to the churches was that there was an ordeal that was going to come upon them. And in spite of that ordeal, keep the faith, keep up your resistance. Don't succumb to the empire. Don't give in to the imperialism. Don't give in to the might. Stand up for justice. And that's basically the power of the book, sisters and brothers. We're marching against evil. Evil that's sweeping over the world. We're marching against big business and their interests in the world. We're marching against and for the liberation of lands and people all over the world who choose to stand up and resist the powers of greed and the powers of might, who refuse to bend over and surrender to that type of naked greed and that naked power. We're marching for justice, and we're marching for liberation, and we're marching most of all the fact that we need to create a world in which disputes are not settled through the barrel of a gun or a bullet. We're marching for peace with justice. Take a look at what has happened since 9/11. We bombed the daylights out of Afghanistan. We didn't find too many bodies of Taliban. But we did find villages and children and families who were non-combatants that were bombed to death. And then you put into power somebody who can't even rely on his own people to protect him, but have to rely on special operations from the U.S. military. Obviously, that sounds like legitimate leadership to me.
Oh, yeah.
Think about what has gone on and what we have just sort of simply accepted. The country in a big way has gone asleep and has been asleep for a while. We're marching to attempt to wake up the giant in this country. Terrorism is not the remnants of the Taliban. Terrorism is not the Palestinians. Terrorism is not any force out there. Terrorism right now is the United States of America and its military apparatus, believing that they can do anything in any way, believing that they can simply conquer people and remove people from power and put people to their liking in power. And sisters and brothers, the reality is we're in this boat because that is what we have historically done. Putting people in power is not a new agenda for this country, but it's an old agenda for this country. Right. Just look at Salvador Allende in Chile, or look at the propping up of the Shah in Iran. You know, we act like Khomeini came out of a vacuum. No, Khomeini came because it was a direct result of our intervention into that country. We believe that we have freedom of the press and we have freedom of the assembly. Well, the press is owned only by a few multinationals. And so one carries the message that the others carry. And when you talk about freedom of assembly, you can't even assemble in Lafayette Park now. If you assemble in Lafayette Park even for a prayer meeting, you'll be locked up. If you stand in front of the White House more than whatever that number is, 25 or 26, right, whatever that number is, you'll be locked up. Where is the freedom of assembly? If you, the people can't take their demands directly to the White House, there is no freedom to assemble. And if the media is not independent enough to carry your voice, there is no freedom of the press. Sisters and brothers, it is crisis time. It is time for us to stand up. It is time for us to take to the street. It is time for us to speak with a loud clarion call. It is time for us to demand justice now, in our time, in this time. Let freedom roll. Let freedom roll. Let freedom roll. God bless you. That is why we march. Let us continue our struggle.
The Reverend Graylin Hagler of the Plymouth Congregational Church in Washington, D.C. That segment was produced by WPFW's Reem Kathuda. Thousands of people are expected to rally this weekend at the Vietnam Memorial Wall here in Washington, D.C. Free Speech Radio News correspondent Josh Chaffin spoke with tourists at the wall, and he presents this musical montage.
Technically, I guess this is not journalism because I'm playing some heavy music in the background, and I guess that's going to color the experience as a listener. The situation itself is heavy. I went down to the Vietnam Veterans War Memorial in Washington, D.C. If you haven't been there, it's a long V-shaped wall that's cut into the earth with 58,000 names and a beautifully green grassy hill where this weekend, Saturday, October 26th, some people say is going to play host to the largest demonstration, anti-war demonstration, since the Vietnam War.
What's your name?
Chris Bissinger. I've been here, I think this is my third time.
There's a big rally this weekend. People are saying it's going to be the biggest anti-war rally since the Vietnam era.
Everybody has their own opinion, you know.
Yeah, they had a little press conference yesterday over here, and, you know, people were saying, we're here next to the wall, and Vietnam Wall, and, you know, we might need another one of these things if we go off on this adventure in Iraq, you know what I mean?
Well, I think, in my mind, that would be a definite exaggeration, but I could be very wrong.
We're from Bradford in the north of England. I'm Luke Clark. It's the first time we've been to America. So.
What do you think of this spectacle?
Well, it's a list of names, you know, to anyone who sees it objectively, but I know quite a lot about the war because I'm a history student and I study it, and I know what each person went through and the suffering and the horror of the war, so it really is quite a powerful spectacle for me. Obviously, it's a situation that the United States of America wants to avoid. Again, to be stuck in an unwinnable war, which is why I think if there's a war in Iraq, it needs to have a specific plan, so we won't be committing a million troops and, you know, we won't be bringing back 58,000 body bags. The Vietnam experience should act as a warning in this situation.
What's your name, first of all?
Dewell Jones.
Where are you from?
North Carolina, Wilson, North Carolina.
The first time you've been to the memorial?
No. This is my second time. I had family and friends that was in the Vietnam War as well as myself.
It's a cheap question, but how do you feel when you come out here?
It brings back memories. I'd rather not talk about them, but it do bring back memories.
This weekend coming up on Saturday over here on the hill, they're going to have a big march, a rally against the war in Iraq.
That's a tough situation right now. Have to see what'll come out of it. I hope they make the right decision on it. They need to keep the media out of it, some of it, because too much is getting published about it. Before they go in, everybody know what we're going to do.
What, in Vietnam, there was a lot of media access, and a lot of the opposition to the war in the United States came from the fact that a lot of Americans could see on TV what was happening over there. That hasn't been the case in wars after that. Media complain a lot about not having access to the battlefield anymore. Do you think that's a problem?
They don't need to be in there broadcasting every move we're going to make. I think it's best to keep them back, and it's better on the families here. It hurts to see one of your loved ones lost like that in a war, you know.
Yeah, the people that are organizing this rally here were talking about pointing to the Vietnam Memorial and saying, hey, we don't want to have another one of these memorials. You know, we don't need to have a reason for that. What do you think about that as a Vietnam vet?
I'd rather not comment on that right now.
Steve Richard.
Maureen Richardson.
Where are you guys from?
Boston.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know people that lost their lives here?
I grew up with a person that I'm looking for now and a person on a panel a little farther down. I hate to see our boys going to these countries and losing their lives. I think it's wrong.
My brother was in it. Thank God he came home. He was the 101st year born Green Beret. I remember him coming home. He never spoke of it for years. He only started talking about it four years ago. He was one of the ones that had, fortunately at the time, was spit on. And I wouldn't want to see this again. I really wouldn't. No.
Do you feel like you're getting good information from the government or from our leaders about the rationale, the reason for going over
no,
to...
No, no.
They're
we'll
going to color it
no.
the way they want us
right.
to see it.
We'll never know. Never. I know that for a fact. We'll never really find out the whole story behind everything.
Kicked out of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial in Washington, D.C. This is Josh Chaffin for Peace Watch.
We can't be down here doing that. We have to leave.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
Today's segment on spiritual responses to the impending war on Iraq, Pastor Johann Christoph Arnold of the Bruderhof faith says their community has an 80-year history of opposition to war of any type that includes conflicts labeled as just wars, wars in defense of oneself by other denominations.
I completely disagree with that. There is never a just war. Any kind of war is wrong. Killing is wrong. It is against God's law. And there are much better ways to solve international conflicts than war. You see, if you take the history of World War I, World War II, every war sows the seeds for next war. Violence begets more violence. So war is useless. It's not the answer. There are better ways. And that is actually to forgive. Jesus said we should love our enemies and we should forgive them. And there is a tremendous power in forgiveness. There's a much better way of getting along with people, and that is to love them, respect them, and honor them. And I believe that this also applies in international conflicts. You see, Werner, I've been all over the world, in many Arab nations, South America, and you name it.
Have you traveled to Iraq?
Yes, I've traveled to Iraq, mm-hmm. and I've basically been in every Arab nation. And what people do not realize that everywhere, even in Iraq, there are people who long for peace.
Now, when you say, Christoph, that you have been to Iraq, so to those who are listening who may say, well, if he knows about the horrors that Saddam Hussein has imposed upon some of the Iraqi people, is he suggesting, are you suggesting, Christoph, that they forgive Saddam Hussein and that in and of itself will be enough to address that situation, to rectify that situation?
Well, you know, that is a pretty broad question, but in my experience, and I've seen presidents and international leaders and you name it, when we start respecting one another, even respecting our enemy, this world will become a better world to live in. And in regards to horrors that people experience under Saddam Hussein, bombing Baghdad will not alleviate any horrors Iraqis are experiencing. In actual fact, are just increasing them because many, many innocent civilians will be killed and nobody will be better served. And you know, in this whole war against terror, the main thread is fear, to instill fear in people. And we have to stop being fearful. We have to start loving and respecting people. And in doing that, we can win our enemies over. I firmly believe that, and I have experienced that, and it has to start on a one-to-one basis, and then it will grow.
It's easy to say fear is the problem, and we just need to overcome our fear, but do you have any advice to listeners that might want to learn how to get on that path to overcoming fear?
The best way to overcome fear is to live one day at a time and to live that day to the fullest. I mean, take once 9/11, and I live here in New York, and it became very, very close to me. It seemed like the world was coming to an end, but what it created in Manhattan was a real sense of community for the survivors and the victims' families, and incredible stories of heroism, of people supporting one another, risking their lives for one another. And, Werner, death is always a message to the living. The more actively we live and believe that there is a better way than vengeance and revenge, and that is to love, then our life gets a purpose. And then also the ones that have died, like in 9/11, you know, they become heroes. And even if they're no longer alive, their lives become an example to us to live and make our nation a better and stronger nation.
Pastor Johann Christoph Arnold, the Bruderhof faith has been in the U.S. for 50 years. Tomorrow, we hear from a minister who's practicing the metaphysical teachings, the Reverend Dr. Carolyn Boyd. Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced by Scott Gurian. Our engineer was Granger Helvey. Our consultants are Larry Binsky and Sam Husseini. Our editor is Reem Kathuda. We had production assistance today from Jim Bennett, Jenka, and Rupert of the D.C. Indy Media Center. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Thank you for listening.